Lecture 7. Consonants, dissonance, and musical scales.
Now we'll look at how combinations of pitches are perceived. When two pitches are played at the same time, the resulting combination can sound very rough and dissonant, like this. Or very smooth and consonant, like this. These differences aren't just perceptual, they also have psychological qualities. When I ask my students to describe the combinations I played you, I get very different responses, with words like tense and ominous for the first, and simple and regal for the second. This is a great example of how even simple musical sounds are full of meaning for human listeners. What we just heard was acoustic or sensory consonants or dissonance, which can be perceived when pitch combinations are heard in isolation without a context. Acoustic consonants and dissonance play a big role in music. They're both important. They help structure the ebb and flow of tension and resolution, and they help give music an expressive, living quality. In the first part of the lecture, we'll consider why pitch combinations differ in how consonant or dissonant they sound. In the second part, we'll look at the structure of musical scales, which are collections of pitches used to make music, like the C major scale. I'll argue that there are some surprising connections between consonants, dissonance, scale structure, and the way we process spoken language. The connection is surprising because consonants, dissonance, and scales aren't features of human speech. When I speak, my voice pitch glides up and down, but it doesn't produce multiple distinct pitches at once, which is how consonants and dissonance are created, and it doesn't jump between a small number of distinct level pitches, which is the hallmark of musical scale structure. We'll focus on scales in the second part of the lecture, but I'll say a few words about them now to give us some vocabulary for talking about consonants and dissonance. Two pitches separated by an octave or a doubling in frequency sound very similar to us. We give them the same note name. Let's listen to two pitches separated by an octave that are both named C in Western music. The first has a fundamental frequency of 130.8 Hz, and the second of 261.6 Hz, exactly twice the frequency of the first. Here they are, played one after another. And here they are played at the same time. They blend perfectly. All cultures recognize the similarity of pitches separated by an octave. It's a basic component of human musicality. When men and women sing the same note, they are often singing pitches that are an octave apart. In Western music, each octave contains 12 pitches, which are given letter names. If we start on C, we have C sharp, D, D sharp, E, F, F sharp, G, G sharp, A sharp, B, and then we return to C. This is called the chromatic scale, and it sounds like this. These 12 notes are the basic pitch material for making intervals and for constructing the scales of Western music, like the C major scale, which we heard a moment ago. Right now, we'll focus on intervals between two tones. The interval between any two neighboring pitches on the chromatic scale, like C and C sharp or E and F, is called a semitone. It's about a 6% difference in pitch. Every pitch interval in Western music can be measured in semitones. For example, the first interval you heard in this lecture was made from the pitches C and C sharp. This is an interval of one semitone, which is called a minor second. It's a very dissonant interval. The next interval you heard was made from the pitches C and G. That's an interval of seven semitones, which is called a perfect fifth in music theory. It's a very consonant interval. A key fact about intervals is that they are transposable or movable up or down in pitch. You can make a minor second from a C and a C sharp, But you can also make it by playing any two adjacent notes in the chromatic scale, because these notes are always one semitone apart. Similarly, you can make a perfect fifth by taking any pitch and playing it with the pitch that's seven semitones above it, like an F combined with a C, or a D sharp with an A sharp. Let's listen to a few different minor seconds and perfect fifths to make this idea clear. Pitch intervals are interesting because they have perceptual properties that aren't present when their individual pitches are played alone. Any single musical pitch, like the piano note C or C sharp, doesn't sound rough or smooth by itself. But when you take two pitches and make a minor second or perfect fifth, you get a new perceptual property, dissonance or consonance. It's been known for thousands of years that different combinations of pitches vary in how consonant they sound, but the reason for this has long been debated. The ancient Greek Pythagoras had a numerical theory of consonance and dissonance based on his measurements of the lengths of the strings that produced the pitches of a musical interval. These measurements fueled his belief in the powerful role that certain ratios and proportions played in nature. As people learn more about how hearing works, biological theories of consonance and dissonance began to emerge. These theories try to explain people's perception of consonance and dissonance across a wide range of different pitch intervals, not just the minor second and the perfect fifth. A study by Josh McDermott and colleagues in 2010 measured the average rating of the pleasantness or consonance of all pitch intervals between one semitone and 11 semitones, when each interval was heard in isolation, outside of any musical context. There were actually four sets of ratings because the ratings were made with four different kinds of sounds: saxophone sounds, synthetic tones, sung vowels, and synthetic vowels. A similar pattern emerged in each case. A graph of the results has an interesting M shape. The very small and very large intervals, like 1, 2, or 10, or 11 semitones, get low ratings, meaning they are perceived as more dissonant. The middle intervals, except for the interval of 6 semitones, get much higher ratings, meaning they're heard as more consonant. Let's listen to all of the intervals that they studied, starting with an interval of 1 semitone, then going up to 2 semitones, and 3 semitones, and so on, up to 11 semitones. You'll hear the minor second as the first interval, and the perfect fifth when the interval size reaches 7 semitones. In the middle of that series of intervals, just before the perfect fifth, you heard a dissonant interval of 6 semitones. This is known as the tritone. When I ask my students to describe how this interval sounds, I've gotten words like unstable, suspicious, and incomplete. Their answers show how consistent some aspects of music perception can be over the centuries. In the early 1700s, this interval was sometimes called the diabolus in musica, or the devil in music. Let's turn back now to musical scales. Even if you've never studied music theory, you know more about musical scales than you think. This is because scales aren't just constructs from music theory. Through our exposure to music, scales become mental constructs that influence how we perceive music. For example, listen to this music. What culture does it remind you of? Now let's change the scale that the melody is built from and the instrument, but keep the overall rhythm and melodic pattern the same. Notice how the cultural connotation of the melody changes. As you can see, scales can evoke cultural associations for us. And we don't have to go outside of Western culture to realize this. In the US, a blues scale is part of what gives the blues its characteristic sound. In Western tonal music, the most common scale is the diatonic major scale, which has 7 distinct pitches. If we start on C, these are called C, D, E, F, G, A, and B, with the next C being the 8th note or an octave above the lower C. If we compare the C major scale with the chromatic scale, we can see that the major scale is formed by taking the starting note C and then choosing notes according to a certain pattern of intervals. 2 semitones up to D, 2 more to E, 1 more to F, 2 more to G, 2 more to A, 2 more to B, and then 1 more to get back to C. This pattern of intervals, 2, 2, 1, 2, 2, 2, 1, is what defines the major scale. We can make a major scale on any starting note of the chromatic scale by choosing notes based on this pattern of intervals. Melodies based on a major scale move between the pitches of that scale, creating melodic intervals. For example, in a C major scale, the interval between C and G is a perfect fifth. It comes from jumping between the first and fifth note of the scale. This is the interval that opens the song Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and the theme from Star Wars. The distance between C and F is a perfect fourth, which is the interval that opens the song Amazing Grace and Wagner's Bridal March, aka Here Comes the Bride. The perfect fifth and perfect fourth are just 2 of the melodic intervals you can make in a major scale. As I said before, even if you've never studied music theory, you know more about scales than you realize, because familiar scales become mental constructs. We know that the scale isn't just a physical fact about the sounds themselves, it's a psychological framework in the mind of the listener, which is used to interpret the sounds that are heard. All human cultures have music based on some sort of scale. Does musical scale structure have any cross-cultural consistency? If so, this could give us some clues about the mental foundations of music perception. One striking thing about musical scales from around the world is that most have 5 to 7 notes per octave. Given that we can distinguish over 100 pitches within an octave, the tendency to use just 5 to 7 doesn't reflect sensory limits on auditory perception. It reflects cognitive limits on how many different pitches and intervals we can keep track of as we process a melody. In Western music psychology, there has been a long history of searching for universals in scale structure based on the laws of acoustics and the biology of hearing. All musical scales use the octave, and most use the perfect fifth, which suggests that there is something about the biology of human hearing that leads us to these intervals. Beyond that, though, the intervals used in musical scales show a lot of cultural variation. Apart from the octave and the perfect fifth, the intervals that make up human musical scales may not be strongly biologically determined. But even though scale structure varies a lot across cultures, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that all human cultures use musical scales. People everywhere create melodies using a small set of pitches and pitch intervals made by dividing up the octave into discrete steps. As the music psychologist Andrei Rakowski has pointed out, there's an analogy here to how all human languages make sentences from a small set of distinct speech sounds or phonemes. Just as different cultures make melodies from different sets of pitch intervals, different languages make sentences from different sets of phonemes. This tendency to make an infinite variety of sound sequences from a limited set of basic sound categories is a human universal, seen in both language and music. The analogy between phonemes and pitch intervals goes even deeper, because the precise acoustic structure of any given phoneme or any given melodic pitch interval depends on context. In language, the acoustic details of a phoneme, like the vowel a in English, depends on the other phonemes around it and on the emotional state of the speaker. In music, made with instruments with flexible intonation, like the violin and the voice, the precise acoustic realization of a melodic interval, like a perfect fifth, also depends on the notes around it and on the emotional expression with which the music is played.